Chapter 9. The new host stood up, the animus settling on her face. Shait was writhing at her feet, scrabbling with his hand at her leg, trying to pull himself up.
"Give it back!"
he shouted through his pain. It was easy to shake him off. The animus was intrigued by the cool, purposeful mind of Eva Savinian, and by the recent blot of panic that had been scrawled across the hitherto perfect page of her thoughts. This was the vehicle which would get it close to Genevieve and Detlef, close to its purpose. It would have to be more circumspect now. Like Shait, this host had her needs and desires. The animus thought it could help assuage them. She spread and fisted her fingers, feeling the pull and push of her muscles as far up as her elbows, her shoulders. The animus was conscious of the perfection of her young body. Her back was as supple as a fine longbow, and her slender limbs as well proportioned as an idealized statue. She spread her arms, heaving her shoulders, stretching apart her breasts. The screaming man at her feet was attracting attention. There were crowds in the street, and they passed comment. Soon, someone would intervene. Shait had denied himself everything, and, with the animus in his mind, had exploded. Eva was more in accord with herself, but there were still things the animus could do for her, and she welcomed its presence, feeding it the information it needed to proceed towards its purpose. Detlef and Genevieve were both in the building, but it would stay its killing blow for the moment. The revenge had to be complete. It would be cautious not to wear out this host as fast as it had Shait. "Eva," said a male voice. The animus allowed Eva to turn to the man. It was Reinhard Jessner, standing in the doorway. He was an actor in Detlef's company, a buffoon, but a decent one. He could be of use. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing," she said. "Stage fright."
Reinhard looked unsure.
"That's not like you."
"No, but one shouldn't be like oneself all the time, don't you think?"
She eased past him into the theatre and darted up a small, hungry kiss at his bewildered mouth. After only a moment, he responded, and the animus tasted the actor's soul. The kiss broke, and Reinhard looked down at Shait.
"Who's this?"
"A beggar," she explained, overdoing his act somewhat.
"His leg is broken. You can see the bone."
Eva laughed.
"You should know the tricks that can be done with makeup, Reinhard."
She shut the door on the still kicking cleric of Solkan and let Reinhard take her back to the stage.
"I'm perfectly all right," she kept saying. "It was just stage fright. Just an accident. Just a panic."
"Curtain up in half an hour," Papa Fritz announced.
Eva left Reinhard and made her way back to her dressing room. The animus remembered the thing the host had seen beyond the mirror. There was no time to take account of it.
"Papa," she told the hireling, "get me a new mirror and whip my costumier into action."
Below the Varga Bruegel, underneath even the fifth level of the basements, there was a saltwater lagoon. 100 years ago, it had served as a smuggler's den. It had been abandoned in haste. Chests of rotted silks and dusty jewels stood stacked haphazardly on the shores. This was the trapdoor demon's lair. His books swelled up with the damp like leavened bread, but the water was good for him. He could drink brine, and needed to immerse his body every few hours. If his hide dried out, it cracked and became painful. But not as painful as the heartache he now felt. He had known how it would end. There could be no other outcome. As a dramatist, he must have understood that. But collapsed on the sandy slope, his bulbous head in the water, its ruff of tentacles floating around it, he was alone with his despair. Everything had been a futile attempt to put off the despair. He heard the constant drip of water down the walls of his dungeon and saw the rippling reflection of his lanterns on the water's surface. Sometimes he wondered if he should just cast himself off and let his body wash through the tunnels to the Reich and then to the sea. If he were to throw away the last of his humanity, perhaps he might find contentment in the limitless oceans. No. He sat up, head breaking the water, and crawled away, leaving a damp trail behind him. He was the trapdoor demon, not a spirit of the sea. There were age-eaten wooden statues of gods and goddesses around the walls, of Verena and Manan, Mimidia and Sigmar, Mor and Tal. They had been ships' figureheads. Now their faces were vertically lined, where the grain of the wood had cracked and greened with masks of moss. Slowly, they became less human. When the trapdoor demon had first found this place, the marks of his own change barely apparent to anyone else, the faces had been plain, recognisable, inspiring. As he had become monstrous, so had they. Yet they retained their human faces underneath. Underneath his skin, he was still a man. The trapdoor demon stood up, on two legs, like a man. The water had washed away some of his pain. Lanterns burned eternally in his lair. It was as richly appointed as a palace, albeit with furniture rescued from the scenery dock. The boat-like bed where he slept looked like a priceless antique from the age of the Three Emperors, but was in fact a sturdy replica constructed for a forgotten production of The Loves of Ottokar and Mimidia. Nothing was what it seemed. Somewhere above, the company would be preparing for the curtain. He had not missed a performance yet, and he wouldn't break his habit tonight. Not for something as inconsequential as a heartless actress. From a hook, he hauled down a cloak, intended to be worn by a mechanical giant in one of the old melodramas. He wrapped himself up and slithered towards his trapdoor. The crowds outside the theatre treated him as a madman and kicked him into the street. The newly broken bone in his leg soared through his flesh. On his knees, his hand pressed to his stump, he threw back his head and screamed. The world spun around him. There was no such thing as a fixed point. A sundial is only useful if the sun is out. Clouds gathered in the night sky, obscuring the moons. Bernabe Shait yelled, and people hurried away from him. His face had been torn away, and he felt as if he were smothered with a mask of hungry ants, a million tiny mandibles dripping poison into his layered flesh. Up in the sky, a speck appeared, a black, flapping speck. His scream ran out, and he just let the pain run through his whole body. His throat was torn and bleeding inside. The speck became a bird, and he fixed his eyes on it. An officer of the watch came near, his club out, and he stood over Shait, prodding him with a polished boot.
"Move on," the watchman said. "This is a respectable district, and we can't be having the likes of you."
The bird was coming down like a rocket, beak first, its wings fixed as if it were a missile.
"I am a cleric of the law."
The copper spat and kicked him in the knee, sending a jolt of pain through his body. The bird still came. The watchman heard the whoosh as the hawk sliced like a throwing knife through the air and turned round. He raised his club and fell backwards, away from Shait, stifling his own yell. The hawk fastened on Shait's head, beak gouging for his eyes, talons fixing about his ears. The bird had razor-edged metal spurs fixed to its ankles, and it had been trained in their use. There was screaming all around.
"Warhawk! Warhawk!"
The beak prized Shait's skull open and dug in expertly. It didn't feed, it rent apart. A gush of warmth expelled from the cleric's head and dribbled down his face. Then the pain was gone and the bird was flying away. Shait collapsed in the street, an unrecognisable, torn, broken mess. The clouds passed, and moonlight streamed down on the corpse.